Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for February 28th, 2018. I'm one of your hosts, Jared Petty, alongside Rogue One himself, Mr. Gary Whitta.
The Rogue One.
The Rogue
the
One.
The Rogue One.
No, you need that article in there?
I think it helps.
So you're not...
Because I'm not actually Rogue One. I'm the Rogue... I don't know. Look, I never signed off on this nickname. They came up with it. I'm just going, like, you know, trying to...
So are you...
Anything for a quiet life.
Are you the Rogue One or the Rogue One?
I honestly don't care. Whatever.
Okay. Whatever you got for it. That sounds good.
Whatever makes you people happy.
And we're off to a good start right here.
I can be whatever you want me to be.
All right. Well, today you're going to be a Rogue One, not the Rogue One.
A Rogue One.
A Rogue One.
But that suggests there might be others.
How do you know they're not?
I don't know. I just like the idea of thinking that I'm special and there's only...
No, wait a minute ago you didn't care about
this. I didn't spend years growing up watching Mr. Rogers for you to come along and fucking tell me that that I'm not special after all.
Listen,
and there's a bunch of other Rogue Ones out there.
This cantankerous man out there. You know what? We can all be special if we try hard enough.
Start as you mean to go on. That's what I say.
Welcome, everybody.
Set the tone early.
Yep. News of the day. But first, a little bit of housekeeping. First off, it says at the top, Jared, talk about your Patreon. So I guess I have to. And I'll be glad to do that. Thank you so much for supporting my Patreon at patreon.com/JaredPetty, where Hop, Blip, and a Jump, my brand new documentary/diary series about video games is going up. We're already more than 60% of the way now toward my ultimate goal of creative independence. You guys have come flooding in with support in every possible way, with subscriptions and with joining the Kinda Funny Facebook, or not Kinda Funny, pardon me, the Pockets Full of Soup Facebook group, etc. But really, if you can drop me a buck or two, it's a good program. There's some good rewards there, and I really appreciate it. So once again, that's patreon.com/JaredPetty. And if you haven't checked out Hop, Blip, and a Jump yet, I don't think there's anything quite like it. So, Gary, you can talk about how great it is now if you want.
I watched the first one. I thought it was good.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, I liked it.
That's kind of you.
Yeah.
Oh, it means a lot to me. I'm really good.
I mean, it's only, 8 minutes? I mean, it's not a huge sacrifice for me to give it a go.
Yeah, it's not a lot of time to watch. It takes a lot of time to make,
That's calculated, right? I mean, there's some science that suggests that if your YouTube video is longer than 10 minutes, people kind of look at it and go, do I really want to commit to more than 10 minutes out of my life?
No,
so you try to keep them short.
I do. A long time ago, I was a preacher. I don't know if you knew that. And
what, really? For real?
Yeah, for real.
Oh.
Yeah, I did that for years. And I always tried to keep my sermons to one point. I figured if you could just get one idea across in a brief period of time, if a person walked away every Sunday with one worthwhile thing in their minds, then that was 52 good lessons they learned a year. And that's plenty for anybody. That was what I was shooting for.
And now you're sermonizing about video games.
Yeah, I love them both.
I like it.
Works out pretty well. Jesus and Mario both had a big influence on my life. It says right here, note number two, Gary, what would you like to talk about before we get in?
What, to promote or pick?
Yeah, to promote.
Nothing.
Nothing?
If you want to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Gary Whitta on Twitter. I wanted to be at Twitter, like Whitta but with a T, because I thought that was clever. Some other guys got it, like 3 tweets ever from like 5 years ago, sitting on that account, so I'll never get it.
Maybe we could appeal to him right here, right now, to turn it over to you.
No, I don't really. I'm happy with what I got. No. I don't have anything to. I will soon. Soon enough, I will have things to come on here and shamelessly shill. But for right now, today. Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter. There's occasionally some premium content on there.
Oh, there was some premium Gary Whitta on Twitter last night.
Was
it was
there?
Pretty great. Yeah. When
I called that guy a scallop.
You called him a scallop. Like a guy was pointing out that my picture, I said it was a happy clam, and he's like, that's a scallop. And you just replied, you're a scallop.
Yeah. That's my style. Like I said, hit and run. Just make one comment and then just go. Like never show up in the thread again.
When else in
life? Who was that man?
I don't know. He's
who came in here with a sick burn and then just left.
You're like the
that is so cool.
You're like the Zorro of internet insults.
I think you're saying you're a scallop might be the best work I've done all week creatively.
It's great. Yeah. It's fantastic.
That was the high point for me.
It's all downhill from here.
Tell me about it.
Definitely. By the way, this episode is brought to you by Brooklinen, and we'll tell you more about that later. But let's move forward first with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Time for some news. There are 6 items on the Roper Report today, Gary.
That's a lot. Baker's dozen.
A veritable baker's dozen indeed, as Kevin points out.
I know you do that every week and it's a thing. Why do you say that? Because it's not a baker's dozen, is it? Only 13 is a baker's dozen.
What I remember is that all the way back to those IGN Beyond days, it was kind of a running gag that Greg didn't know how many a baker's dozen was.
Oh, okay.
And that he just sort of ran with that. And so a baker's dozen is 13.
Yeah, and you know it's actually a real thing.
Yeah.
If you go to a bakery and ask for a dozen rolls or whatever, you will actually get 13.
13, yeah.
That's a baker's dozen is a real thing.
I think it originated in your home country, actually, didn't it?
I'm not sure where it originated from, but it is definitely a real thing.
I believe, and I could be wrong about this, that it originated in England when there was a law passed that there had to be a dozen pieces of dough worth of product if you sold a dozen, so that people wouldn't sell things that were too small.
Oh, so the extra one makes sure that there's some buffer there?
Yeah, so make sure it's a buffer.
Oh.
That's what I've read. It's been a long time.
I don't know. Maybe someone in... maybe this is the first mission for You're Wrong this week.
Yeah, it could be.
Let us know.
Let us know if we're right or we're wrong about that. Item number one, and this one's a doozy. Sony to end PS3 and Vita support on PlayStation Plus. Well, sorta. So let's get into that. From Polygon, time is running out for PlayStation 3 and PlayStation Vita owners when it comes to the monthly PlayStation Plus slate. Sony will no longer include PS3 or Vita games in the lineup starting March 2019, the company announced today. So that's a year from now.
Okay, so you got a good year's preparation prepare for this.
Yeah, you got to
Got
a year to get ready for the apocalypse. Exactly. Time to repent. But there's more. February 2019 will be the final month to follow the six-game format that has been in place since PlayStation 4 launched in November 2013. Two games on each of the three platforms. Starting with the March list, which will go live March 8th, 2019, Sony will only include PS4 games. Sony said the monthly lineup will focus on PS4 titles and no longer include PlayStation 3 and PlayStation Vita titles. However, the company did not specify how many games it will offer every month. There is no word on whether there will be six PS4 titles, for instance. We, that's Polygon, have asked Sony for clarification. We'll update this article with any information we receive. Nothing else about PlayStation Plus is changing, according to Sony. The terms of the free game arrangement, the customers must have an active PlayStation Plus membership to play the titles they've added to their library, will remain the same, as will other benefits of subscription, such as the cloud-based storage for save files. Many of our fans are playing on the PS4 platform with the increasingly vast number of PS4s in homes around the world, said Sony, as a way of explaining its decision. Sony launched the PS3 in November 2016 and the Vita.
2006.
Oh, 2006. Well, look at that. You're reading. Did I say 2016? Sony launched the PS3 in November 2006 and the Vita, February 2012 in North America. And it's nice to see the company providing a year's notice on the platform's retirement for PlayStation Plus. Quote, we'll continue to prioritize the benefits you receive through your PS Plus membership, such as online multiplayer, online game save storage, PS4 monthly games, and exclusive PS Store discounts across content and network services, end quote, Sony added. Sony is cushioning the blow a bit by offering a stellar lineup of free PlayStation Plus games for March 2018. For more on that, see later in the show. So, what do you think, Gary?
Well, I mean, it's time, isn't it? I mean, the time marches on. Old systems fade away.
They do fade.
This is actually a good opportunity for me to demonstrate my ignorance about the current state of the Sony platforms. Like, okay. What's the wider state of the moribundity, if that's even a word?
The wider state of the moribundity. Since I don't understand what you just said.
You know what moribund means.
I know what moribund means.
Dying or about to die.
Yeah, all right.
And that's obviously what both the PS3 and Vita are.
That's definitely,
and this is a nail in that coffin.
It is, or an admittance that the nail is already there. We got to be careful. I mean, I play with my Vita quite a bit. I really enjoy it. I do love to live on Vita Island, but it's an aging platform at this point. And the PlayStation 3, obviously, always meant to be supplanted by the PlayStation 4. And has largely arrived.
The PlayStation Plus store presence here is one aspect of it, and they're closing that. And again, this is you see the beginning of the end.
Mm-hmm.
In the widest, and again, forgive my ignorance. Is the PS3? Are the PS3 and the Vita, are they even still in manufacturing? They're not making them anymore,
not
right?
That I'm aware of, but I can't speak to the Vita. I don't think they're making new PS3s
anymore.
Well,
I mean, the funny thing about this is, I mean, this just adds fuel to the fire of my theory that the Vita doesn't, in fact, exist, and it's all a figment of Miller's imagination.
No, it's real. I have one of those.
I think you've been co-opted
once you've
by his weird cult.
Once you look into the OLED of the Vita, you can't look away. So you've never played P4G or anything like that? Never been in there for that?
No, my first Persona was Persona 5 on PS4.
Well, did you enjoy it?
I'm in the middle of it right now and I'm loving it.
It is worth grabbing a
just for that one game.
A Vita, just play P4G. Yeah,
I mean, I imagine I'll be able to pick one up pretty cheap before too much longer.
Probably. And, you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing. I buy a lot of things late in their life cycle.
I asked about the PS3 purely. I mean, I assumed it is out. I haven't seen one in a store for a long time. People still pick them up used. But when they actually stop manufacturing them, I don't know. But I just remember that, with the PS2, because it had such a massive, massive install base, that long after it was considered obsolete. Mm-hmm. There were still games coming out for a really, really long time because there were just so many out there.
Yeah, there's no reason not to. There were, what, 150, 160 million about there?
Crazy number.
There's a crazy number of them. And so why not manufacture games for it?
They were making PS2 games for a long time after they were no longer making the PS2.
And since the PS4 is not exactly, you know, backwards compatible, and since there's no successor to the Vita, there are some reasons to still have these out there in the market. There are games that, actually, there's a lot of PSN games at this point that I can only play on PS3 or PS Vita.
Right.
That aren't actually available yet on PS4. And that's another consideration. It's one of the reasons I go back to my Vita so much. We've also got a question from Billy the Door, who writes, "Hey, Gary and Jared, he knew it was going to be us. How did he know?"
Well, Greg tweeted it out, didn't he?
Oh, is that what it was? Yeah. I was just hoping he was. I was hoping he was prescient.
You and I were in a Twitter thread talking about it. So.
Yeah, but I was still hoping he was prescient. I was just hoping.
Oh,
this
you
was
just think there's just like a wish that came true.
Psionic phenomenon.
Shot in the dark.
Yeah, just something like that. He's a mind reader. He can see the future.
Gary and Jared. Okay, go on.
It finally happened. No more Vita and PS3 titles coming to PS Plus. Do you think people will see this as a negative? I'm optimistic it'll lead to more AAA titles being included in the lineup going forward. Bloodborne and Ratchet & Clank are big gets, in my opinion. It's also interesting there was no mention if they would continue offering free VR titles to PS Plus members.
I don't know if it means there's going to be more good stuff coming along. I think it is just, again, it's time, if not past time. And the Vita and the PS3 both are, to use that word again, moribund. There's little argument there.
I love that you use moribund.
It's such a great, if that word didn't exist, somebody would have to invent it.
Invent it, yeah. I like that. And although moribundity, you kind of did invent it.
I don't even know if that's a word, but I like it. Sounds good, moribundity.
It does. Professor moribundity.
Professor moribundity. And so, you know, when you've got systems like this that, again, are, you know, they're not, I mean, apologies to anyone who still enjoys those systems, but they're not relevant anymore.
Oh, yeah, not cutting edge. I think there is some relevancy to going back and playing things that are a few years old. There's a lot of reasons for that. Some people don't jump into console life cycles until very late on. Right now, the fact that these are discount consoles, there are households where a new Vita is going to show up for Christmas this year.
And you know, I'm aware of, even as I'm saying it, of kind of sounding like a bit of a snob. You know, we're in a privileged position. You know, we do this for a living, and we have all the latest systems, and we play. You know, we're in the current generation, but you forget that a lot of people out there are still very happily playing away on their PlayStation 3s.
I send my brother Xbox 360 games every now and then that I pick up because that's what he's got. That's what he still has. And nonetheless, do we think this is a good thing? I do think Sony, in my opinion, Sony's going to cushion the blow with more. They're not just going to give you two PS4 games a month. I don't think that they want to be perceived as dropping from six to two. So they'll probably give you more. And they'll have more to say about it as you get closer. They're just kind of leaving things open right now. They probably got a year to figure out exactly how the plan's going to
work.
I do
like that they gave people a year's notice.
Exactly.
You have plenty of time to get mentally right with this notion.
Also, you're not going to lose what you had. That's the other bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's not going to be new games appearing on the service, but it's not like they're taking away what you already have.
Yeah.
So you're going to still be able to play those games. That's going to work. Anything else, Gary, on this one?
I think we're ready to move on.
Moving on to number two. New game from developers of BioShock series and Dishonored. That's right, from IGN. The Blackout Club is a cooperative horror game from Question, a studio built by industry veterans whose work includes BioShock 2, BioShock Infinite, and Dishonored. The game follows a group of teens in a small town who, quote, band together after learning they've all been temporarily losing consciousness, end quote. None of the adult members of the community will speak to the kids about the incidents, including the disappearance of one of their close friends. Instead, the group launches its own investigation. Ooh, how Scooby Gang. What they discover is a hostile underworld beneath the town populated by a clandestine group of adults. Characters are customizable, each with a variety of powers and equipment loadouts. Group members each have their own roles to play in gathering evidence to prove the crimes of the adults, including deploying drones and traps. At the end of each mission, players level up and acquire new abilities for use on future outings. Horror games continue to expand their reach. With our list of the best... Oh, wait, that's IGN's article. Just stop right there. There we are. I think I should have cut that...
When you cut and paste.
Cut and paste. Should have cut that one out of the script. Yep, you can tell it's been a while since I've done this. So...
First quarter 2019, it says here at the end.
So the first thing I think of when I hear this, it kind of sounds like the best parts of Freddy versus Jason and Hot Fuzz coming together into a video game. I'm okay with that. got some kind of mystery the adults are hiding from the kids. You've got some secret underground weird adult organization going on. I'd play that. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, so, I mean, there's obviously not much to know right now, but the pedigree is very good, right? The other games that these developers have worked on.
Yeah, what do you think of Dishonored?
I liked it.
Yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I particularly like the world building because there'd not been anything quite like that kind of like Elizabethan steampunky retro vibe. That was not a world that I had seen before.
Yeah, I think it's
I like that they built something that felt different.
It's great when video games transport you to a place that just seems completely unfamiliar and a little bit new. I like that about it. And the fact that you can interact with it, you can do that in a book, but then it's just happening in your head when you get to push the button and you don't know what's going to happen. Ooh, that's delightful.
It's interesting they call it cooperative horror as well. I feel like this is a genre we're going to see more of because Friday the 13th was a big hit, right? Mm-hmm. And that was kind of online. You know, you're playing online cooperatively, asymmetrical gameplay. You're either Freddy or one of the kids, not Freddy, Jason
yeah.
One of the kids trying to survive. And that was really successful, right? People really like that game. Fun play, fun to stream. People like watching it on Twitch. So I feel like this is probably, I don't know if this is a direct response to that, but I do think that we are going to see more of those kind of games, and I like that because I think they're a lot of fun.
I like the name, the Blackout Club, and I agree they are a lot of fun. Well, part of what makes Friday the 13th work is that despite some of its faults, there's so much TLC poured into that game. I got to meet the people behind it several times when they were working on the campaign, and man, those people cared about getting it right when it came to the Friday the 13th mythology and feel and world building you were talking about.
Yeah.
I imagine people that have worked on BioShock and Dishonored likewise going to understand world building. So I think there's a very good chance it's going to be atmospheric.
What do you think's happening to these kids when they black out?
Oh, you know, well, again, I'm going back to Freddy versus Jason. Hypnosil. Definitely some Hypnosil.
What is that?
It's a plot device in the Nightmare on Elm Street movies and the crossover with Friday the 13th.
Okay.
It's used to keep you from dreaming so that Freddy can't get into your dreams.
All right, okay.
Yeah, it protects you from that. No, that's not what I really think. I have no idea, actually, but I can't wait to find out.
I mean, all kinds of horrific possibilities suggest themselves.
Yeah.
I'll play it. It looks yeah, why not?
I'm not good at puns, Gary, but the next headline I have here on the sheet, Yakuzoops.
Who came up with that?
I'm kind of proud of that. That was me.
Oh, that was you? Okay.
That was me. Yakuzoops. Yeah,
Yakuzoops.
We've had a Yakuzoops here, again from IGN. The Yakuza 6, the Song of Life demo has been removed from the U.S. PlayStation
Store. She sells seashells on the seashore.
Having a lisp stinks. It's really
the worst. Do you have
a lisp? Oh, yeah, totally.
Don't really notice it.
Yeah, I have a lisp. It gets worse sometimes when I'm reading. After Sega discovered users were able to unlock the full game, the official Sega Twitter account issued an apology today for having to remove the demo for the latest Yakuza title. I'm sure they did. The tweet explains that some players were able to use the demo to unlock the full game without paying for the full game, which isn't too surprising.
How were they able to do that?
Given its whopping 36.53 gigabyte download size.
Yeah.
Sorcery, that would be my guess. It looks as though the demo is the full game with the intent to allow players to carry save data over after purchasing the title.
Oh, right. Yeah, sure. Why not?
Which is great. As Yakuza 6 is a fantastic entry into the series for new players. That's from IGN. All right. What do you think, Gary?
I mean, I think that, you know, if you can avoid this by not shipping the whole game with you know, what appears to be a very weak doorway into the full thing,
yeah,
just chop off the part of the game that you're going to sell or that you're going to give away and ship only that. I'm sure people would appreciate the smaller download sizes. Things like this won't happen. And it seems like you could probably still do a contiguous save, right? Something you saved in the demo.
So the way
carry over.
The way these things come together and the nonlinear nature of AAA game development, sometimes things are dependent on things that happen later or earlier. You got to be very selective about what you cut out of something like this. So my guess is they thought this was going to be the best solution and that they had enough safeguards in place. And just like, let's just get it out there because we want to guarantee the feature works. Probably in retrospect would have been a better idea to maybe go back and custom tweak it to a deliberate demo, if
you're going to ship the whole thing, make sure that whatever it is that's preventing people getting to the whole thing is uncrackable. And then secondly, assume that nothing is uncrackable because this shit happens all the time.
Also, if I remember correctly, poor Sega, but I believe this has happened to Sega before. If I remember correctly, back in the Dreamcast days, they put a demo of Choo Choo Rocket up and forgot to take the rest of Choo Choo Rocket out. So you could just play all of Choo Choo Rocket, I believe, online for a while because it was a Flash game. So they accidentally released the entire game. Let us know if I'm wrong about that, but I think memory serves. Poor, poor Sega making good games. And
I didn't even know there was a new Yakuza. I have Yakuza 0. I downloaded that over the holidays.
What'd you think?
Well, I only got to play the first part of it before I started. I moved on. Then I tried Persona, and Persona really got hooked into me. And that's all I've been playing. So I'll go back to it. I did like what I played. But I was confused about whether or not, like, I didn't know if Yakuza 0 was a good way in if I've not played any others. People said it is.
It is.
Sounds like this new one might be as well.
So here's the thing about Yakuza. I don't think there is a good way in because it's just sort of like getting hit in the face by a cream and mustard pie. It's completely insane and absolutely weird. But then once it drips off your face, you look at the bottom of the pie pan and you discover there's actually gold down there underneath. This is a very, very poor metaphor. So outside, it looks confusing and weird and like it shouldn't fit together. But then you peel off the weird stuff you're not used to. You look underneath like, oh, this is pure gold. This is wonderful. This is a bad
metaphor. Part of what got me interested in it was I was watching someone's Twitch stream of another Yakuza game. I don't know which one it was in the series, but like the first 10 minutes, I remember thinking like, this is batshit insane.
Yeah.
Like this is nuts watching here.
It's almost akin to Metal Gear, but less full of itself in the weird factor.
Yeah. Or even like Saints Row, but like less overtly comedy.
Exactly.
It's like it's crazy, but it's, again, it's one of those things where you look at it, you go, okay, yeah, it's a GTA type game.
Yeah,
I get it. Nothing crazy about that. But then you watch it for 5 minutes, you go, oh no, this shit's actually crazy.
No, it's very,
like, it doesn't wear its craziness on its sleeve, but it's there.
No, it's part Saints Row, part Shenmue, part GTA, and a little bit of everything. All
mixed
together.
Who wouldn't want that?
It's fun. Yeah, it's worth checking out. Definitely. Right. Overwatch, that their game, adds a new hero. Da, 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 da. After a series of teasers, Blizzard has confirmed Overwatch Hero 27 is Bridget Lindholm, who will be available on the PTR today. I believe this is from Polygon. Bridget's strengths lie in armor and defense as a support character, including her ability to throw repair packs and use her flail, a melee weapon, allowing her to hit a number of enemies with one swing. Her full list of abilities, along with her official descriptions, include rocket flail. Bridget's melee weapon has an extended range, enabling her to strike multiple enemies with a single swing. She also has a repair pack, whip shot, barrier shield, and shield bash, an inspire ability, and rally. Actually, I think that looking at this, this is from IGN, not Polygon. My apologies. The new hero's reveal comes after Blizzard teased a new challenger yesterday on Twitter via two images. There we go. New Overwatch. What do you think about this, Gary?
I have a lot of thoughts about it. I love Overwatch. I think that what Blizzard is doing to grow the game with regular new characters is terrific. I mean, I love Team Fortress 2, but when's the last time they added a new character? It's pretty much been the starting lineup from the beginning, right? Have they ever added a new character from what was there at launch?
From Team Fortress 2?
Yeah.
Not that I remember. I'm sure we'll be asked, we'll be told if we're wrong about this.
So they're up to 27 heroes now.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. And I love the way that Blizzard does it as well, that they do these cinematic reveals and this story, again, world building and storytelling and lore in the way they introduce the character. And then you can go play the character in the game. And I got to say, as a design, from a design perspective, it's also very, very impressive. Think about that. 27 characters with distinct roles.
Yeah.
And the game doesn't break. Like, they found a way to balance the game. Like, there's no like set of characters you can put together that like gives you like a really strong advantage. Like it's the balance somehow still.
Yeah, you're
holds.
you're gonna hear people screaming about Mercy, and you're gonna hear, but the tweaks by and large keep the ecosystem in pretty good shape. They're very careful about that. It's never gonna be perfect. It's a lot like making a fighting game. You try to balance everybody else out, but you want to make them distinctive. And every one of these heroes feels radically distinctive, different from the other. And that's a very hard thing to pull off. And I love that they roll these heroes out one by one with so much TLC, each with their own trailer, each with their own testing phase. And here we are now. You go out there and you can play a new hero, and suddenly not just the way you play that hero, but the way you play the other 26 is going to change. And I like that a lot.
And the lore is very, I mean, if you want to get into it, you know, it's all out there. The lore is very deep, and this character has like a whole backstory that fits in with the rest of the Overwatch mythos. But what's very clever about it, I think, is, you know, it doesn't burden the game. The game doesn't have any story in it at all. You just go play.
Yeah.
So all the story is delivered around the periphery of it, but you still kind of have it in your head when, like, if you're into Bridget, and you go play her, you know who she is. But the game doesn't have to carry any of the responsibility of delivering the story. They just do that all externally. And I like the fact, I mean, this is a support class, right? Again, I like the fact that they encourage team play and assistive play by saying, here's a support class. And not everyone always like, and I've played, like, I don't always want to be Mercy, but if you have a good heal, again, having a good healer is critical in any of these kind of games. I remember the old days of Team Fortress where like
playing that medic.
People are shooting the heavy and it's like, shoot the fucking medic, dude.
Yeah,
like,
kill the medic.
You're not gonna, that guy can heal him quicker than you can damage him down. And it takes a while for people to figure that out.
I'm an old man, Gary, and some of my favorite gaming memories to this day are all the way back in the original Quake playing this new mod called Team Fortress that somebody made for
it. Oh, yes. And so I remember it so well. You know what we used to play the most? I remember The Hunted?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We used to get El Presidente from point A to point B.
The escort mission that was actually fun. Maybe the only time in the history of video games the escort mission was fun.
I got to take a moment here to tell you my favorite Team Fortress story.
I'm ready to hear it.
So the original Team Fortress, which, again, many may not remember, but it was the mod that gave birth to Team Fortress 2. In fact, it was the same guys.
Right. It rolled down first through Quake, then into Counter-Strike, and then finally, then into Half-Life, and then finally
into... And people don't remember what the original Team Fortress looked like. Team Fortress 1, but it didn't look great. It was very jaggy, and it looked of the generation of 3D that we had.
Very colorful, though.
And it was crappy, but this one mode in Team Fortress 1 was very, very cool, where you had... It was called The Hunted, and you had one team whose job it was to... And one character had to play... The president, who was essentially just like a guy in a suit who had no weapons. I think he had an umbrella, right? You could use it as a melee. He could hit you with his umbrella. But it wasn't very effective.
And melee weapons did not work well in old games.
All he could do was try to stay out of sight. And there was skill to it. You had to learn to play as the president, like where the sight lines were for snipers. And like, don't put your head up. Don't get too far ahead of your escort, because everyone else on your team is essentially the Secret Service,
which is especially
trying to
usher
you to the exit point.
Right, they're protecting you. And if you're in a game where you can't crouch, that's especially important.
That's right. That's right. And so then the other team were the assassins that had to kill the president before he could get to the exit point. And the map was designed in such a way that there were various choke points and kill zones where, again, if you're the support team trying to get the president out, you're aware of like, okay, we're This next part's going to get hot. Like, this guy's going to be waiting for us here. And so there was all kinds of tactics, trying to outwit the snipers, and the snipers trying to outwit the Secret Service guys. I had a thing that I was very proud of when I played as one of the assassins. There was in the end, there's a courtyard, and the exit point is a garage with a Jeep, and the engine's running, and you get the president to the Jeep. That's where you get him.
Okay.
And that's, you win as the defensive team. The courtyard had different little sniper towers and little crow's nests and little places where you could hide. And I would hide in one of these spots that was hard to find. And I would have my sniper rifle out and set it up. And of course, you can see the dot.
Yeah.
You can see the red dot. Mm-hmm. So every now and again, if you're playing on the defensive side, if you saw that red dot like on the president, you're like, you would jump in front of him to take a bullet.
Yep.
And that was all part, again, it was so much fun. So here's what I would do. I would set up. And I'd have my red dot on. Because again, the way it worked was, I don't know if it works this way in the current Team Fortress. My memory's not what it used to be. But in the original one, you held the button down.
Right.
And the longer you held the button down, the redder the dot got and the more powerful the shot was.
Yep.
And then you release the button to actually take the shot.
Right.
The problem with it is, again, people can see the red dot.
Yep.
And so in that final run to the courtyard, you would see these red dots like sweeping the area, and sometimes you just go, just go. And you try to be human shields for the president. Because if you can just get to the car, you win.
Right.
So here's what I did. This is my little stroke of genius. And I imagine that many other players did this as well, because it wasn't that hard to figure out. But I did figure it out myself. And I was very pleased about it. I hid my red dot in the tail light of the car, which was a red light.
Oh, that's so good.
And so you couldn't see the dot. It was right over the tail light, and it was also right where the wind point was. So not only did they not see the dot, I capped the president in the head a fraction of a second before he would have got out, and it was like the most painful way to lose it. He's going to win, No, they got him in the last second.
And you always just explode when the sniper shot hits.
Boom, because it's like max power.
Yeah.
So I'd pull the sniper dot out, because all I had to go from I had it all worked out, from where the dot hid in the tail light to where I need to kill the president, it was just like a fraction of an inch I had to move it and release.
Oh.
And so I would just sit there and wait. If they didn't see me, because they didn't see the dot. All the snipers are clear if all the dots are gone, and I would get that motherfucker every time in the last fraction of a second. Anyway, I'm reasonably sure you killed me that way. I may have.
Yeah,
that was a long story for not a very great gaming achievement, but it's one of my proud moments in gaming.
You should be proud. That's clever. That's very clever.
It was fiendish.
Because not only did it hide the dot,
but like I said, you got the player. Like, they think he's out.
Yeah.
He's in the garage, like a quarter of a second away from like hitting whatever hitbox gets him out, and that's when he would die. He would die. Like his head, like right, boom.
Oh, loved it. That's dramatic. I loved it. There were a lot of good old mods for Quake. You had Predators, you had the Hunted, you had Team Fortress. There were Superhero Quake.
Hunted mode was so much fun. I don't know why it hasn't shown up in other mods, like that should be like a multiplayer mode that's in almost every game because it's so much fun.
It's so hard to get escort missions right. I imagine that's one of those things that may die in testing.
People hate them in single player, don't they?
They do.
When you say like you've got to get this guy from here to there, and it's like some reliable NPC.
Except who gets held up on things
and can't really follow you very well. And if he dies, you got to go back and do it again.
Yeah, I think the only time people ever gave an excuse for that was Blast Corps. For some reason, escort mission in the game was okay.
Remember the one? Another one I used to hate the most. And they don't do them anymore because people hate them so much. Remember like the missions in a game like GTA where they say like deliver the car from here to there, but you can't get a scratch on it.
And
you'd get it all the way across town, then you'd fucking scratch the fender like parking it in the garage.
Yeah, I'm just like, this is not okay.
That was not fun. Not fun.
Glad to see those go. Moving on to the next one. The new Chrono Trigger is actually new. What's this? From Touch Arcade. The Steam version of Chrono Trigger is not a port of the iPhone version of the game. It's a brand new version that was pushed out simultaneously to Steam and mobile and bears very little resemblance to the prior mobile version of the game. Granted, that version also used an awful font and smeared the whole screen with a filter to eliminate those pixels that publishers seem to think we all hate. But that's not where this new version came from. That wouldn't even make sense, as I can't imagine a 7-year-old non-retina port designed to run on an iPhone 3G would work out all that well on modern PCs. A quick comparison between the previous mobile version of Chrono Trigger and this new one makes the difference quite plain. So for some background, Chrono Trigger drops a surprise Steam version yesterday, but perhaps overlooked a little bit, it also provided an upgrade slash new version on iOS yesterday. The two versions are identical. Now, the old version of Chrono Trigger on mobile was not great. The new version of Chrono Trigger on mobile, I've spent some time fooling around with, and it is perfectly playable. It's the same kind of fugly interface that you get with the Steam version, but on mobile, it looks all right so far. I'm having fun with it.
Now it does, after they've updated it.
Yeah, it never looked great. I mean, it was kind of ugly before. Now it looks a little prettier. They've streamlined some things. I still wish the buttons were in a little better places for the combat. There's some gripes I have about it. But the point that Touch Arcade is making here is that, yes, this came out on mobile. Yes, this was obviously designed to work on mobile, but it's actually really designed to work on multiple platforms so that the Steam release and the mobile release could happen simultaneously. So that's, Gary, have you played either in the new version yet?
No, I haven't. I mean, the context for the story is important because yesterday I did see, you know, Patrick Klepek at Waypoint and a bunch of people were discussing this and talking about how it looked like they had just ported the mobile version.
Mm-hmm.
And even somebody said, like, even the touch controls in the mobile version are on the Steam version, which doesn't seem like you think that you would at least come up with the right control mode.
No, I don't want to give them a pass here. What happened, I think, what Touch Arcade's trying to say is not that these were problems that were inherently about porting a mobile version. These were problems about being lazy and porting identical versions to mobile and to PC. And I realize that's splitting hairs, but we don't want to give the idea that they took the old Chrono Trigger and just threw it onto Steam. They actually went to the trouble to make a new version for both platforms.
Right.
It's just that new version still has a lot of problems. It's identical
across
both now.
The new one still feels like a mobile port, just a port of a better mobile game than before.
Yeah, and I think that Touch Arcade, and they had a pretty good point here, if you read this entire editorial, is pointing out, look, it's not that mobile's the problem. They could have done, there are lots of great mobile games, they just made a lazy port. To both platforms.
If you're obviously Chrono Trigger is a game that a lot of people are very fond of.
Yes.
Because, you know, it's a classic. So now that this is out there in the state that it's in, should Chrono Trigger fans be happy to have it even in this form, or should they be saying, come on guys, you could have done better? This is Chrono Trigger.
It's a game that deserves so much respect that I hate to be the guy that's like, okay, it's a beautiful game. Even playing it on Steam, there's still going to be a lot of incentive to go to it because it's such a good game. My advice is if you have a better way to play it, play it a better way. How do you do that? half the human race owns Nintendo DSs at this point, and the DS port of Chrono Trigger is phenomenal.
Okay.
It's one of the very few cases where I would argue that a later port surpasses a true classic. They did some beautiful things with it.
Was the DS the last time there was like a hardware release of Chrono Trigger?
Of Chrono Trigger?
Like an actual cartridge or a disc or something?
A cartridge release, yes. I believe that was the last time we got one. There is also a downloadable version for the original Wii on WiiWare.
Okay.
That if you port it over the weird, awkward way to Wii U, you can play that way too through the weird Wii mode. There's the mobile version. There's the PSN version, which I don't recommend because even though it's more faithful in terms of its artistic beauty than the version that's on Steam now, it does have some of the load times. And normally, I don't care as much about load times, but Chrono Trigger was designed to be snappy, snappy, snappy. Everything is seamless in Chrono Trigger. Battles happen on the map. You don't transition to a battle screen.
Right.
It's literally somebody you're walking by. Areas just load instantly. The whole game is about speed and pacing, and load times kind of screw that up. It's still worth playing, but it's not the best way. So I would say that if you're a Chrono Trigger fan, you probably already have better ways to play this. If you are not a Chrono Trigger fan and curious, it's better to play Chrono Trigger in this form than not to play it. And I would say that actually, honestly, if I had to choose between the PC and the new mobile update, they're the same game, but playing on mobile is a little more palatable to me. And that's what I'd go for.
One of the things I do miss about the old days of cartridge gaming is you never had to wait for anything. It was all, you know, game loaded instantly. There was never, there's never a loading screen or never a wait time on a cartridge game. Was there? Like it was all instant.
Very, very rarely. There, Street Fighter Alpha, I think it was Street Fighter Alpha for the Super Nintendo had load times on a cartridge.
Did it really?
It did. Isn't that weird? Yeah. There was so much compression to get that game in there that actually had load times.
Wow.
But very, very few games. Like, I think one of the Star Ocean games has it too, a few others, but almost never.
Pretty much always. You know, back in the day, it used to take time for screens just to draw in.
Yeah.
But, you know, you rarely were. Now you turn on your PlayStation, it's half an hour before you're even doing anything because it's got to update this, that, and the other.
Mario Odyssey has load times, weirdly, and that's a cartridge. Very short load times, but it does have them.
So does Zelda.
Yeah, there we go. So there's a few. Zelda. It does happen occasionally. Gary, especially glad you're here for this one because
what's this?
Well, Ralph's going to break the internet. From IO9, the first trailer is out for Ralph Breaks the Internet, Wreck-It Ralph 2. Oh man, we're going to need an acronym for this one. That's from IO9. That's not my commentary. Which takes Ralph out of his retro gaming comfort zone and into the worldwide webiverse. But be careful. It's full of haunting kitten eyes and traumatized toddlers. So the trailer came out today, and Wreck-It Ralph is leaving the arcade and going out into the internet along with Vanellope. Gary, you're one of the few human beings that I've ever met that writes things for film or television.
Yeah.
What do you think about this?
I like, you know, good, right? More Wreck-It Ralph's not a bad thing. The first movie I thought was, did a very good job of faithfully capturing a lot of, you know, kind of classic pop culture video game characters and moments. And if you like video games, there's... felt like they did it in the right way, right? They went and affectionately had little homages to all these kind of characters from video games that we love, and it's rare to see them all together like that because, you know, licensing issues, but, you know, Disney can figure out a way to brute force through all of that and make it happen. And this, I thought this was a clever idea for a sequel. It's a kind of the next logical extension, right? The internet age and memes and emojis and God knows what else. And I'll be interested to see what they do with it.
Yeah, I'm really hoping they'll take on internet culture. I mean, Zootopia surprised us by coming in kind of out of left field and making a very interesting, thoughtful, insightful, kind of poignant story about racism. That's the same studio that's putting this together. Big Hero 6 touches on some pretty spectacular themes like that. I'd like them to actually take on internet toxicity in this movie in a kid movie friendly way, and I really hope they
do. Yeah, and that's not that would not be an easy thing to do, right? Because that's a very serious and disturbing subject often. I think it is something that kids who are growing up in the internet generation need to learn early.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how to be positive on the internet and how to deal with the negativity that comes at you, which can often be really, really damaging. And, you know, it has a real psychological, emotional impact. So if they have found a way, which I hope they have, as you say, to address that in a way that is palatable and digestible to a young audience, I think that could be a very valuable thing.
What's your favorite video game movie?
Last Starfighter.
Oh, great choice.
I mean, not based on a video game, right? But it's about a video game.
It's totally about it. That is a video game.
Like the favorite video game, my favorite movie that's based on a video game, I would probably say Mortal Kombat. Just because it was just, you know, it was what it was. And I will say I did like the Street Fighter movie.
Okay.
Oh, because they just zero fucks were given. Like, they just went all in.
The Street Fighter movie with the director's commentary in particular is spectacular. Have you ever watched it with a commentary track?
No.
Oh, you need to go ahead. There's so many. Do you notice all the signs are in Esperanto?
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. They put so much TLC into a movie that they didn't have to in all the wrong places. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
I really love it.
Yeah. And I mean, Raul Julia obviously just having a great time. So many great lines came out of that movie. You know, when I met you, it was the greatest day of your life. For me, it was Tuesday. All that stuff is great. And my favorite, I still love it at the end when Jean-Claude, you know, I am going to kick Bison's ass. Now, who wants to go home and who wants to go with me? And everyone goes, yay! And I'm in the theater going, yeah, I want to come with you. It was just great fun.
Even though he's really...
I think it might be time for a rewatch.
Oh, I think it would be a great time for a rewatch. I'll sit down with you and watch that if you want.
Let's do it.
All right, we're going to watch that together. We're going to watch Street Fighter the movie. If you haven't watched it, it is bad, but in all the best ways.
That would be premium content. We could get the movie,
yeah,
watch it,
yeah,
do a commentary, and people could get the movie and watch along with us, and it'd be fun.
I'm up for that.
Let's do it.
All right. Okay. For more on that, see us later. Excellent. Gary,
is Street Fighter the best movie to do that? Yeah, it is, right?
It's a lot of fun.
Like, what else would be as good?
You
as
mentioned
that?
Mortal Kombat's a delight.
Yeah.
Resident Evil could be fun that way. But I think Street Fighter's ideal for that, actually.
Yeah.
I really do.
Yeah.
That's kind of an idea. My favorite video game movie is Scott Pilgrim, but that's actually a good movie and not about a specific game.
Again, another one that is steeped in video game culture, but is not based
exactly.
on a specific
not based
game.
On, but based yeah. on, yeah, Street Fighter is a lot of fun. Gary, moving away from movies about video games to video games, if people wanted to know what they could get today for their various video game platforms and consoles at all, etc., where would they look?
That would be the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday.
Yeah!
Kevin!
I just cut, like, I don't know how to do the other part, so I just did my bit.
Where's the jingle?
I don't know it. So I just did my bit. Yeah.
You have to do the jingle.
I've specifically heard Tim ask you to do the jingle.
He's just being lazy. It's actually your responsibility.
It's not on the chart. It's not on the sheet.
A lot of people on the internet are really upset about this right now.
What are they upset about?
Tim doesn't do the jingle, does he? I know Greg does.
Kevin's supposed to do the jingle.
Tim's a coward, and Jared is proving right now he's a coward also.
I'm not a coward at all.
I'm
you know what?
I'm just stating facts.
I'm a showrunner, my friend. Showrunner. Not coward.
I think
showrunner.
Producer is kind of what you're doing.
What, producer?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you're the producer.
No. I'm the technical director.
You're the technical director. What?
Button presser.
I kind of feel like the a cappella jingle thing is Greg's thing, and it wouldn't be right for someone else to try and copy that. That's his trademark.
Gary, thank you for respecting Greg. No one else
Well,
has.
I wouldn't go that far.
Well, that's true.
Listen, that you're a sense. Technical director. I'm a showrunner. You're a Rogue One. We've established that earlier.
Yep.
And you're supposed to do the jingle, Kevin, because Tim said so. All right.
What's out today?
Out today, Bridge Constructor Portal for Switch and Xbox One. Perfect Angle for PS4. Where the Water Tastes Like Wine for PC. Rift Star Raiders for Xbox One. Deep Rock Galactic for Xbox One. Darkest Dungeon for Xbox One. Ooh, exciting. And Switch or Die Trying for Xbox One. Also, friends, I haven't gotten around to reviewing Space Cats with Lasers yet because I'm saving that for Tim. No, that's Tim and I. We'll talk about it on there. So, Gary, I didn't want to ambush you with Space Cats with Lasers. I'd forgotten we were doing this together when I talked about doing that. So that's what we got there. Anything you want to add to that, Gary?
No, not really. Did anything jump out at you here? Bridge Constructor Portal, I'm interested to play. I like Bridge Constructor games.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, anything, even like a weird offshoot of the Portal universe, I'm always keen to look at it. Any time to get a little bit more of you know, GLaDOS and that signature Portal humor,
Can you give us a precis of Bridge Constructor? Because I've never played it.
Well, I'm not sure if this is exactly the same one that I used to play, but there's a whole genre of these, essentially, where you are challenged to build a bridge from point A to point B over like a ravine or a river or whatever, and you have a certain number of pieces, like various metal beams and girders and things like that, and you have so many of each piece, and your job is to construct a bridge that is engineeringly stable and can stay erect. And, done.
You can't even do the jingle, Kevin. Go back over there and play some more Candy Crush.
And, again, I don't know if this one does it. the one that I used to play, you had to, it would then roll a truck or a train over it, and it had to take the weight. The bridge might seem good, but when you have to roll the truck over it, then you realize, oh, it's actually not fit for purpose, and the whole thing would collapse in a tangle of metal, and you had to figure out where. It would show you also, like, the engineering, like, stress points, like where the metal was under stress. Okay, so clearly I need to shore this part up. And this I think is the in the same genre as that. But you add portals, and obviously that's a whole adds a whole new dimension of engineering possibilities.
I see what you did there. New dimension.
Whole new dimension.
Now look at that. I love that. That sounds intriguing. It also sounds like a game that would make me afraid of bridges.
Well, I mean, it's you should be, right? Because bridge, you know, infrastructure in this country is in a terrible, terrible state, and so we don't have portals.
Fun
to
fact:
help fix it.
When the Fukushima Daiichi earthquake happened, I was living in Japan, and I happened to be stopped on a bridge in a traffic jam when the quake hit.
Okay.
So Japanese bridges, because it's an earthquake-prone country, are designed to flex,
right?
And move when you're out on them.
Yeah, the same as the bridges here. It's supposed to go with the flow, and that's how it does. You know, if it bends, it doesn't break.
Exactly, and that's much, much safer. But let me tell you what: when you're sitting in the car on one that's doing that. And
yeah, you're not sitting there going, oh, yes, engineering doing its job, keeping me safe. You're just shitting your pants.
No, you're just like, why is the world moving?
Yeah,
that was, what an awful
day. Earthquakes are terrifying. I mean, for people that live in parts of the country that don't have them, it's not fun when you feel like literally the entire planet is shaking.
No.
It's not fun. It's at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, because they always seem to happen in the middle of the night. It's really strange.
Yeah.
It's almost invariably. Deals of the day. Let's talk about the March PlayStation Plus. We got a new PlayStation Plus lineup. Your deals of the day. All kinds of groovy stuff happening here. First off, Bloodborne.
That alone is a big deal. Bloodborne, right?
Yeah, this Bloodborne. You like the Bloodborne?
I never played it because, the whole thing of it was much like the Demon's Souls and Dark Souls games, very hard.
Yeah.
I don't like to play games that are very hard because I'm not good at games. So I need games that can be easy.
Okay, Bloodborne is not your game.
It's not for me.
No.
It looks like a cool game, but I think I would find it too frustrating.
Well, it is free right now.
So I could try it.
You could try
it. No cost to me.
Exactly.
Maybe I'll give it a try.
Yeah, because it is.
Can you at least crank the difficulty down? I don't know.
It's a really groovy. No. You can't craft it. It is a little easier than the Souls games, in my opinion, but it's still
viciously
hard.
I do find them fun to watch. One of my favorite things to watch on the internet is Dark Souls videos of people being killed in like horribly unfair ways.
What the IGN guys in London do, Prepare to Try. You ever watch that?
No.
Oh, that's they have that down to an art form, what you're describing. It's beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they have an edited commentary show. It's gameplay, but it's very carefully edited together for maximum humor, and it's wonderful.
For Dark Souls. And what's this called?
It's called Prepare to Try.
Okay, I'm gonna go look for that.
Yeah, IGN makes it. It's a delight. The IGN London guys kind of go off and just do wacky, zany stuff sometimes, and that's been a spectacular breakout success for them.
There used to be a Twitter account. It's not there anymore, but I used to follow it. It was called Why Dark Souls Why, and it was just they curated and collected various videos of different sources of people dying in the most horrendously unfair ways, and it was hilarious.
Why Dark Souls? Why?
Yeah,
I'm going back and looking at this because I've never followed that.
Okay, well, I don't know if it's around anymore, but there was a period where I used to follow it, and they served up videos of salty players, killing a boss and going yay, and then falling off a ledge that was like totally it's totally not fair the way they drew the environment to make you look like there was a ledge there, but there wasn't. You are dead or you died? Or
you died.
You died.
You died. Yeah. It's just like you
see that
died.
All the time. You died.
I want to mod it so it just says Starget every time or you got a moon. So Bloodborne for PS4, Ratchet and Clank for PS4.
That's a good one too.
Another high quality. Two standout PlayStation 4 games.
Yeah.
Then for PlayStation 3, Legend of K. Also Mighty Number 9.
Yeah.
Then on Vita, Claire Extended Cut. Bombing Busters, and a special note, Mighty Number 9, Claire, and Bombing Busters all support cross-buy, so they're also all available on PS4 when you do this. So that is five PS4 games this month, counting the stuff with cross-buy. That's a good month. Which things are you most excited about, Gare?
Of these?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, again, I'll try Bloodborne, because I know it's a very well-liked game, but again, I don't think it's really my speed. Ratchet and Clank I already played.
Yeah.
Other than that, I don't know what any of these really are. What is Claire Extended Cut?
I don't know. Good question.
Well, again,
but it's on the list.
PS Plus, it's all free.
We're going to find out.
For us PS Plus
members. We're
going
to have to find out. Perhaps I should go play it this week. Reader mail this week is brought to you by brooklinen.com. Greg hates to go shopping, and brooklinen.com takes one more trip out of his life by allowing him to order bedding online. Brooklinen is the fastest growing bedding brand in the world, over 12,000 five-star reviews. Brooklinen sheets are named the winner of the best in online bedding category by Good Housekeeping. Versatile colors and patterns. You can mix and match to complement any decor. This is luxury bedding, underpriced. You have to try these sheets today. Brooklinen.com, highest quality sheets, no big markup. Greg got them. He loves them. He went with a white duvet cover with blue polka dots, always a good choice, and then some blue sheets, and Jen loves it. That's how easy it is. Even an adult like Greg can mix and match sheets and covers and impress his wife. If Greg can impress his wife, so can you, or husband, or whoever you want to impress. So, what about all this? Well, you spend a third of your life in your sheets. They make a difference on how you sleep. You start getting better sleep with better sheets. No unnecessary markups or fees. Most bedding is marked up as much as 300%, but not at Brooklinen. Greg loves his Brooklinen sheets, and Brooklinen.com has an exclusive offer just for listeners here at Kinda Funny Games Daily. Get $20 off and free shipping when you use promo code GAMESDAILY on Brooklinen.com. $20 off and free shipping, promo code GamesDaily at Brooklinen.com. Brooklinen is so confident, they offer a risk-free 60-night satisfaction guarantee and a lifetime warranty on all their sheets and comforters. The only way to get $20 off and free shipping is to use promo code GamesDaily at Brooklinen.com. That's BROOKLINEN.com. Promo code GamesDaily. Brooklinen. These are the best sheets ever. Sounds good to me. I'm convinced.
I mean, who doesn't like sheets?
I mean, I got to buy some new sheets.
Being in bed.
No, I need some new sheets. Right, I don't think Angie's going to watch this episode. I'm going to surprise her with some new sheets. That sounds fun. She'll like that.
Yeah. I mean, again, who gets new bed sheets and goes, oh, I'm not happy about that?
Well, I've gotten new bed sheets that I was not happy with. I've gotten low quality sheets before. I bought sheets that I did not like. But from what Brooklinen is saying,
it seems like you wouldn't be getting low quality sheets.
No, getting high quality sheets here. So I'm very excited about it. Exactly. No, I've got, but you're like, who gets sheets and doesn't like them? Well, you buy shoddy sheets,
shitty sheets.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But these right here, Brooklinen sheets, not shoddy. As a matter of fact, the opposite of shoddy, high quality, good, affordable. Buy them. So let's look right here. Let's jump into reader mail. Maddie Pooh. First off, congrats to Greg on a great Dice Award show.
I didn't watch it. Was he good?
He was good. Greg Miller, good. What? On stage? Imagine that.
That's true.
Yeah, he did a good job.
Yeah.
Didn't get a chance to watch any of it?
Well, I had a chance. I just chose not to.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense. Well, you got Greg, but you also got Chobot there, and she's great too. So
yeah. What was I doing? I can't remember. There was actually a good reason why I didn't watch it. There was something else going on. I can't remember. My life is a fucking
I'm reasonably mess. Sure you didn't watch it, so you could say you didn't watch Greg on the show.
I gotta be able to hold that over.
Yeah. I tend to disagree with some of the Dice Award winners because I'm a contrarian bastard. But one of the ones I really agreed with, not that it had much competition, was Injustice 2 for fighting game. In fact, I go so far as to say it was the best game I played in 2017, much for the same reasons Tim's mentioned before. It does everything it sets out to do incredibly well and presents a stunningly complete package. Still, I know it was never in the conversation for Game of the Year. Do you guys think a fighting game will ever realistically have a chance at Game of the Year at this point for any award ceremony? Thanks for your time and keep up your amazing work. Gary, your thoughts?
I think this actually came up a few shows ago when we were talking about, I think it may have been late last year when, you know, the Game of the Year stuff was still kind of being adjudicated and discussed, and it came up. I heard a lot of people saying, I know this guy here says, Matty Poo says that it was never really in the Game of the Year discussion, and perhaps on a serious level it wasn't, but I did hear a lot of people saying, like, why aren't people talking about Injustice 2 for Game of the Year? Because it's really, really good. Mm-hmm. And I'm not a fighting game fan with a chip on my shoulder about it or anything. I know nothing about fighting games, and I don't play them very much. But I do think that there is maybe a little bit of bias against fighting games because they're never in the conversation, even when you've got a contender like Injustice 2, which is really, really good. Why do you think there's a bias? It seems like there is.
I think that I think they suffer from a lack of exposure relative to games around them because right now, looking out, they're played by fewer people in the overall arc of things than some other games on the market that maybe get more press time. You're not having Call of Duty numbers with your Injustice 2. You're not having Super Mario Odyssey numbers, I expect, with Injustice 2. That said, however, what genres and what types of game can rise and fall, ebb and flow in popularity, has changed a lot over the years. I mean, there was a period of time that 2D side-scrolling platforming was effectively dead. Mm. That just was not a thing. And then the retro revival happened, and at first they were a novelty. But now it's effectively not, it's no longer odd to see a high-quality 2D side-scrolling game happen, and we don't think twice about it. That's not a retro game anymore. That's just a genre that's been reborn. If we go back to the past, you and I are probably playing this around the same time.
I want to go back to the past. Well, let's go. I want to go back there and stay there.
You want to stay in the past?
I was happier.
You're happier in the past?
I was happier then.
What made you happier then?
I don't know. Maybe it's just nostalgia.
Right.
But I have fond memories of my early video game days.
Well, there's some pretty great stuff back there. And I remember a time when fighting games were the hottest thing in the entire world. Do you, my friend, remember Street Fighter II and the effect it had, not just on arcade culture, but the effect it had in ultimately deciding the first great console war?
Well, I remember it being a big deal. How did it decide the console war?
Because, my friend, at a time when, at least in the United States, and again, I'm talking with that American bias here now,
yeah,
when the Sega Genesis was well ahead of the curb and kicking Nintendo's butt all over the place in the marketing, Nintendo secures, with their, granted, better suited for this kind of game hardware, both in terms of number of buttons on the controller and the way it handles color palettes and things like that, secures a long exclusivity deal on the hottest video game in the universe, Street Fighter II, home version, coming to SNES only for that first year. And let me tell you what, there were lots and lots of people I knew that ran out and bought a Super Nintendo just to play Street Fighter II at home.
Yeah.
The quality of that port was superb, and that is where the tide really began.
So Genesis never got Street Fighter II, is that?
Or it did, for a year, much later. Yeah,
but that year was enough to make a dent.
Much later, it was a huge. Oh, the dent, nothing. And when it did come out, frankly, it's an inferior version.
But as I recall, interestingly, in other areas of the fighting game sphere, there were the deck was maybe stacked towards Sega's. If you remember Mortal Kombat,
yeah,
which was also very hard. People kind of laugh at Mortal Kombat now, but like when it happened, I remember when it first came out. Remember that TV commercial, Mortal Kombat, little kids running through the streets.
Got that Mortal Monday,
yeah. Oh, Mortal Monday.
That's right.
It was huge. It was an absolutely seismic level marketing event. It was massive.
ABACABB, my friend. That's what you got to press.
What did that get you?
The blood code.
Right. Well, so that was the thing. As I recall, you got blood in the Genesis version out of the box, but the Super Nintendo either didn't have it or was it hidden behind a code? I don't recall.
In the Genesis, the original version of Mortal Kombat, it was hidden behind a code.
Okay.
But it was there and it was an easy code.
Yes.
And there was even a hint screen that was like, warriors have a code of honor, but there's another kind of code.
Right, a secret code.
The game actually says that too.
Yeah.
Nintendo never did it in that version.
It wasn't available even with a code.
Nope, just sweat.
And again, so like, I mean, it's kind of gross, but one of the things that people liked about Mortal Kombat was the fatalities and spines getting ripped out and stuff. Yep. And if I had been a Mortal Kombat guy, that would have pushed me towards Genesis.
And my Genesis friends went that way, but Street Fighter was such a seismic event. I mean, there was a time that a fighting game was, you know, you combine the music, the incredible iconic characters, the superb backgrounds, the pixel perfect hitboxes, the comboing, that game was like nothing we'd ever seen before. There had been fighting games, but Street Fighter just wiped the floor with what had happened before.
Had that guy in the background whacking off, remember that?
I do remember
that. Two-frame animation.
We watched that. I remember we spotted that a lot. it was adolescence. But yeah, it's extraordinary, and it did really help push the Super Nintendo back into parity. And then you go on, and yes,
so you're saying prior to that, the Genesis was moving ahead.
The perception was it was winning the
battle.
And
Street Fighter exclusivity on the Super Nintendo reestablished the parity.
You had those sports games. You had those third parties coming in. You had Sonic, but then Street Fighter suddenly that moved units. And then Donkey Kong Country, which granted was not that great a game, but was amazing to look at when it came out, won the war in 94, and that kind of pushed the Super Nintendo over the edge finally.
What did you have back in the day?
Back in the day, I was actually, if I'm talking preferred platforms, I was a PC guy at that point.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, no kidding!
Yeah, well, PC, I was editor of PC Gamer back then.
Okay, so yeah. That, all right, what were
but
you
But we had the Nintendo and the Genesis magazine, or Mega Drive, as it was in the UK. We had those magazines were right next door, so I'd occasionally go over and see what's happening in the Mega Drive and Super Nintendo worlds.
I loved to play both the consoles then. I mean, and actually I had a soft spot for the TG-16, which is a topic for another show.
Yeah.
I really liked
the PC Engine?
Yeah, the PC Engine. I love the PC Engine. I actually ran it.
R-Type on the PC Engine, still one of the best arcade ports ever.
It's superb!
Incredible.
That's such a good port!
Incredible.
Absolutely. You know in Japan that came out on two cartridges? You had to buy it twice.
Oh, really?
They put the first three stages on one game, and they put the next three stages on another game.
I didn't know that.
In America, they just put them all on one.
It was a phenomenal port, though, and I remember being amazed. The TurboGrafx-16 here in the US was bigger, but the PC Engine that we had in the UK was this tiny little
box. It's diminutive.
I was amazed at how small it was.
Yeah.
And graphically, it seemed to be doing better than any of the, it was better than the other consoles.
Yeah, I talk about this on Gamescast. It had this marvelous, beautiful flatness to the graphics.
Yeah.
A cartoony look that I just loved. That,
yeah.
And it had a more limited palette than the SNES or the Genesis, but somehow that palette was used in really interesting ways.
I remember looking at R-Type on the PC Engine and going, that could be the arcade game, and I wouldn't know the difference. It was that good.
Man, Gary, we're going to have to wax nostalgic about the PC Engine sometime. I'll do this with you all day.
I don't have a lot of PC Engine memories beyond R-Type, other than there was a game, a Japanese game called Chan and Chan that you might recall.
I do!
Where you could crouch and poop. It was based on a Japanese comedy duo.
Yes.
And I think their name's translated as Chan and Chan, or maybe, again, someone in your wrong world.
It actually came out here.
Correct me.
It
was a comedic
side
scroller, these big-headed characters.
Yep.
And you could, one of the things you could do is crouch, and a little brown poop would come out.
Yep.
And I can't remember what the gameplay purpose of that was, but I remember back in the day, I was on Computer and Video Games magazine at the time, in the office watching that going, oh, poop.
Yeah, there's a lot of toilet humor in that game. Birds would poop on you, if I remember right. You do things like just infantile humor and stuff. But yeah, that was sold. I think it was sold as JJ and Jeff over here. I believe
something
that was
like
the name.
That, yeah. We had the Japanese, it was all in Japanese, so we had no idea what was going on.
Oh, no kidding. Okay.
But, the language of poop is universal, so we enjoyed it no matter what.
We're in danger of going a little over here, but I think people expected you and I to talk for
every
a while.
Every time I'm on, it goes over because I go on and on and on.
We're going ahead here. We want to give the people what they want because we just haven't quite answered enough of these, I think. So we're going to go into a couple more. Lord of Pawns says, hey, Jared and Gary, I was wondering what stories and games have impacted you most, whether it be physically, emotionally, or just sticks with you. I just recently got the Platinum Trophy in Persona 5 after putting 145 hours into it, and I started playing it back in the end of November. It's the longest I've ever invested in a game story, and it'll certainly have a lasting impact on me. I was basically living inside that world for 3 months.
I totally feel where this guy's coming from right now, because that's where I'm at right now, in the middle of that.
All right.
Like, Persona 5 is one of those games. Again, I never played a Persona game. I only played it because I heard people raving about it. I thought, I'll give it a try. I like JRPGs.
Yeah.
And it looks different. I went in knowing almost nothing about it other than it looks different. And I'm 60-something hours in. So depending on how you play, anywhere between like maybe like a halfway, maybe there's more, I don't know.
Yeah, that's a long game.
But I'm overwhelmed. I'm honestly just so in awe of like just how much stuff.
Yep.
How much dialogue and content and side stories, and it's just massive.
Atlas can make a game.
It's remarkable, and the aesthetic is just stunningly beautiful, and the soundtrack is incredible, and it's one of those games that when I'm not playing about it, I'm thinking about when I'm going to get to play it next. And halfway through, I'm already starting to feel sad that it's going to be at some point it's going to be over. And I'll go back and do New Game Plus maybe and play it in different ways because there's multiple ways to play through. But like you only get to play it through for the first time once.
So
and I'm already, what's interesting is, when the game loads, it says, take your time.
Yeah.
Which is actually, that really is a very good piece of wisdom from the developer saying like, don't feel the need to rush through it. Don't, just bash through the dialogue, enjoy it. There's a lot of stuff here. You can't, I think there is when a game like that, I often feel like the need to rush and get things done. But there's no rush. Enjoy the game.
No, savor this.
Wander around. Go do stuff. Like, it's, sometimes it's time critical. You got to do stuff by a certain time. Other times you can just kind of do whatever you want and explore and do weird side stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just a fun, like I said, there's exactly what this guy says. It's a fun world to live in, and I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, savor that experience. Two things I'd say. One, it reminds me very much of what it was like the first time I read Lord of the Rings as a kid.
Yeah.
When I got to Return of the King, I started reading less every night.
Right, because you don't want it to be over.
Exactly. It really grabbed me. And second, another argument, go grab that Vita, play P4G, because it's just as good a game, and you're going to get just as locked up in that world. It's set in a small town in Japan, and as a guy that used to live in a small town in Japan, that's especially
everyone's different, right? Everyone's got a slightly different cast of characters, different aesthetic.
Oh yeah, different world, different aesthetic. This one, P4G, is about a serial killer that hangs people from television towers.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, it's a really neat game.
But it's the same kind of Mind Palace thing. Is that what you're doing?
You're gonna like it. I don't want to spoil too much of it. I don't want to spoil too much of it.
Okay.
That said, he asks what stories and games have impacted you most.
It's a good question. For me, I'll tell you the one that. And I mention it a lot. The one that still gets me the most is Journey.
Mm.
And, you know, the genius of that, of course, is that, you know, it tells a story purely through suggestion. You know, everything is like, it gives you almost nothing.
Yeah.
You kind of have to figure it out on your own. And there's a lot of interpretation. And I remember sitting down with Jenova Chen after the, I had an opportunity to sit with him sometime after I played the game. And I was like, okay, just, I want to hear it from you. Like, what's that all about? I want to hear from you what, and the only answer I get from him is like, what do you think? And that was, and I think that like, he may have an idea in his head of what you're supposed to think, but you know, like any great piece of art, it is wildly defined by your own interpretation of it. And I think no two people think exactly the same thing. I love, it's this beautiful poem.
It's inviting you into his headcanon there. Sort of
yeah.
That's lovely.
People don't necessarily think a story when they think a journey because it's not overt, but it is absolutely there. Again,
yes.
It's all suggested. It's inviting you to kind of fill in the blanks. And in terms of the emotional impact, I remember when I first got the game, someone who had played it said, just do this one thing. Take the phone off the hook. Like kids these days, I don't even know what that means, but like switch your phone off, close the curtains, you know, turn the sound, be in, and play it all the way through in one uninterrupted 2 hour, totally immersed in the game. Don't get up and make coffee. Just do it all the way through in one go. Trust me. And I did that. And it was, you know, those again, I don't want to spoil it for people that may not have played it, but those final moments just were so emotional. I was like really emotionally overwhelmed by what was going on at the end. And then right at the end, my wife, who didn't know what was going on, came home, and like right as the denouement was playing out, my wife came in, turned on the lights. Hello, what's for dinner? And I'm like, oh, I was in this beautiful spellbound moment at the end of the game, and he's like, the bubble just popped.
The last stanza of the beautiful poem is suddenly interrupted.
Right? Oh, you know when you get to like the end of a great book, and you just linger on that last line, and the book just kind of sits with you for a while, and it's almost like kind of a post-coital moment of just like, oh, I'm just gonna sit here and just enjoy this in this afterglow, That's what that was for me.
I had a very similar experience. The first time my wife played Journey, I was very excited to show it to her.
Yeah.
And we set up exactly the way you're talking about. Literally turned off the phones and then closed the doors. And she was just so deep into it. And then the snow level crashed 3 times in a row.
And again, that's going to break the immersion.
It did. I felt so bad for it.
It's starting to get...
That's the final
level. It's closed.
Level.
Yeah.
It was... It really...
What a bummer. I've never had it crash.
For me, we were playing on the PS4 port, the download. And I've heard that can be buggy on the last stage. For me, very quickly, a story moment that really grabbed me was one of the things I think Gone Home doesn't get enough credit for as how it works no matter what sequence you play it in. House is laid out in such a way that no matter which way you tackle it, it comes together into a coherent story.
Right.
I found the secret passage, or one of the secret passages, within the first 5 minutes of the game.
Yeah.
Because I look for stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I actually started the game from the basement and worked my way up.
Okay.
Because of that, I found the book the father had written way before I think most players do.
Okay.
And the note from his father that's talking about how he's slumming it as a writer,
right?
About how he could do better things, about how disappointed his dad is.
Oh yeah, I remember.
And that final note,
you
can do better.
Yeah.
Also, because of the sequence I happen to end up playing through, I get to the father's study. It's almost the last room in the game I enter. I've been playing for a long time. I've gotten to know this family through the things later on in the house. I've gotten to love them. I walk into the father's study, and there is this huge handwritten sign hanging over his desk that just says "You can do better."
Uh-huh.
That he's written for himself.
Uh-huh.
And after learning about the tragedy, it was like being punched in the gut. I was like, these words have never left this guy. They dominate his life now. And I've watched that unfold. That was a beautiful piece of storytelling.
Yeah.
And the thing is, if somebody else played a different way, they encountered that in a different order.
Right.
And I love that.
Yeah.
I wonder what it said to them. So that's a rare bit.
I remember the early going in that game before I, because again, I went in knowing almost nothing.
Yeah.
And the game very, very successfully plays on your expectations and the tropes of giving you just enough to think this is going to be some kind of horror experience.
Yep.
Every room you go in, like, you're so relieved when you find the light switch because you've been conditioned by games like this for something to jump out at you. And you think that's what this is going to be. And all the way to the very end, the game is like thinking, the sooner or later, something horrific is going to happen. And it keeps you on tenterhooks the whole way through.
Oh, you're on your toes the whole time.
Very,
that
very
flash. Well. I love that moment. Oh, it subverts so many expectations.
Yeah, very well done.
Quick question here from Space Ghost. I'm just going to read the first part of it. Jared and Gary, are either of you excited for Ni No Kuni 2? Yes. Gary?
Don't know what it is.
There we go. All right. But yes, I am. There we go.
What is Ni No Kuni 2?
Ni No Kuni 2?
Other than the sequel to Ni No Kuni.
The sequel to Ni No Kuni, exactly. It's the Studio Ghibli-inspired RPG. Inspired by, in coordination with Ghibli.
Oh, okay. So, okay. All right.
It's a really cool thing. Ni No Kuni was a very neat PlayStation RPG, and I'm glad they're making a sequel.
All right.
I really want to I'm really wanting to see that. So I think we're going to have to skip ahead. Otherwise, we're never going to get to the end. So let's squad up. Squad up. Hey, Greg and Tim and Nick and Andre, and I can't really name everyone. Sorry, didn't name either of us. How rude. Look at that.
How dare
he? Oh, man. I've enjoyed you, Greg, ever since. I've enjoyed you, Greg, ever since you were an eager young buck who took over a little podcast at IGN. You're getting pretty good at this stuff. I hope you keep it up. Okay, here's the deal. I'm old. Not old as dirt old, but my 20-year-old daughter is probably older than most of your audience. I've been playing ever since Pong. No shit, Sears Home Pong. Age 7. Represent.
About the same as me.
And I've had nearly every generation of console handheld since, although I skipped over the PS1 era, and that's about it. I play and enjoy all the games other than sports and racing. I'm a very experienced and moderately skilled gamer. Here's my problem. My skill level in most games is on par with people half my age, but my tolerance for young people's immature BS is quickly approaching zero.
This guy's speaking my language.
Also, quickly approaching zero is the number of people I know, even close to my age, who still play video games. And those who do kind of suck. I spent precious weeks of my dwindling life teaching my son how to use dual analog sticks. I'm not about to try to teach some grandpa how not to spin around looking at the sky, who probably won't live to see Destiny 3 anyway. I'm wondering if there are any other older-ish best friends out there to play with. Specifically, I'm looking for decently skilled gamers with mostly grown kids, real-world perspectives and concerns, a sense of humor and fair play, and a general respect for other human beings. Oh, and have a mic. I think that'd be easy enough to find, or you think that'd be easy enough to find. Anyway, I figured that if there are folks that like that to play with, this is a decent place to look. I'm not sure I'll find other gamers my age here, but pretty much everyone in your community seems friendly, fun, and respectful. You have everything to do with that, by the way, Greg and company. I'm currently playing Monster Hunter World on the PS4. Would love some help taking out Kushala Dora. I always pronounce it incorrectly. So far, he's the only one I haven't been able to beat solo, and I'm loath to leave matchmaking up to chance. If I have to deal with one more shit-talking 12-year-old, I'll explode. My PS name is Old Shoe. That's Old _Shoe.
I definitely, I'm guessing I'm around the same age as this guy. Maybe he's a little bit older because he's got grown kids, but I would say the most precious commodity in games is people that you get along with and can play with online, like a group of friends that, you know, you can team up with. You know, because matchmaking randos these days, it's usually a disaster. I've had good and bad experiences, mostly bad. But like having when Burnout Paradise comes out, I'm already laying the groundwork, making sure that I've got like a good group of players who are going to be up to play. And again, especially at this age, because like when you're at this age,
yeah,
you've got shit to do. You've got a life. you've got bills to pay. You've got a wife. You've got kids. And, you know, that precious gaming time, it is so precious. And it is so rare that when you get there, You don't want to spend half of it like matchmaking randos. You want your buddies to be there with you.
I picked this one because you and I, for the kind of fun of family, pretty much the old geezers in the house.
Yeah.
And we can do a little bit of, back in my day, you didn't have to do matchmaking. You were there in the land and you liked it.
That's right.
You know, local area networks. But yeah, Old Shoe, a lot of great people out there in this community. I think you're going to find who you're looking for.
Old_Shoe. Old? Maybe even I'll add him.
Yeah.
Because I'm in the same position. I've got people that... around our age, but again, it's hard to find people that have all got their kids down and in bed at the same time, especially with time zones and stuff like that.
You're gonna go hunt monsters together. That's great.
Well, I don't know if Monster Hunter is the game for me, but again, in general, I'm always looking for reliable other. There should be like special groups. Like, okay, all the old dads go in this box, and when you get match made, you get a bunch of other old dads. Because I want to play with other dads.
I have mixed feelings about this because I do enjoy the opportunity to meet new people and people from different experiences and different ages and but I totally understand wanting to find people that have some interests in common with you right away, especially again given the occasional default toxicity of the online community.
Indeed.
Now, Gary, here on the sheet, we're up to your wrong, and it says, Gary, will you please set this up? Gary, are we there?
Let's do your wrong.
Are we ready for your wrong? Do we have the your wrong? We have the
Isn't there usually an here? iPad here?
There is usually an iPad here.
Uh oh. Where is it?
It's in where? We're looking at it. Here, we've reached that part of the show.
What's going on?
No.
No, this is it's all gone wrong.
There's no iPad.
Something's
gone
wrong.
There's no iPad over here.
Yep, something's very wrong here.
If there is, I don't know.
Don't have the
your
wrong iPad. I was looking for
is it
there.
Hiding under there somewhere?
Is it there? It's totally there.
Okay, all right. Is it set up?
It's it. Going there for the your wrong?
I don't know your password. See, I don't know.
Gary had one job. You had one job, Jerry.
We've got to get it on the right page.
Oh, man. While Gary's looking at that, I'm going to sit here and talk into the mic for a second and try to...
Okay, thank you.
Just kind of calm you with the dulcet tones of my sultry voice right there. A little bit dulcet, a little bit sultry. Gary's looking this up here. I really do think, having worked here for about a week, we can come up with a better system for your wrong than the one we've got right now.
Usually somebody's already pulled it up.
Uh-huh. I see how it is. You know what? We put that in the notes. I don't see it here. I don't see it.
Okay, you ready?
Seems like a technical director failure to me. Sounds about right.
You ready?
I'm ready.
Nobody really knows for sure where a baker's dozen originates from, but it is widely believed, according to phrases.co.uk, that this phrase originated from the practice. You actually kind of had this right. Originated from the practice of medieval English bakers giving an extra loaf when selling a dozen in order to avoid being penalized for selling short weight.
There we go.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Woohoo.
Kind of the opposite of the butcher kind of putting his thumb on the scale.
Well, that's
the bakers are honest and butchers are dishonest. Is
yeah,
that
a, what the we're butchers, saying? The baker. What about candlestick makers? We've covered the other two.
I don't know. That's a good, that's a very good question.
All right.
Polygon updated. Oh, that was from Kebabs, by the way. Thank you. Metal Floss, there's another guy here with a similar explanation of it. It's just interesting. It is still a thing. Like, I was in a Noah's Bagels the other day.
Yeah.
And they sell you bagels by the dozen, but it's a baker's dozen. You get 13. So it's something that continues to this day.
It's a cool tradition.
I like it.
It's the one time getting 13 is something feels good.
Yeah, that's right.
Although right now I can't do it because I'm on keto, so no baker's dozen
No bagels for you.
No baker's one for me.
Polygon updated their PS Plus article. Sony confirmed it will be just two PS4 games per month. So they're not taking up the slack. You just won't be getting those games anymore.
Okay.
Let's see. IGN originally reported on May 30th, 2017, that production of the PS3 had ended. Okay, so that was the official kind of end of life for the PlayStation 3. But as of now, Sony has not officially announced that the Vita has been discontinued.
There we
but
go.
Come on.
Oh, you got to love
it. You know, Sony has got this habit of hanging on to formats long. Remember how long mini-disc and like digital audio tapes stuck around?
Some long things after they never should have been dead. Die. And to be fair, if Sony had killed the PSP in Japan as early as maybe some people had suggested when it was underperforming, they wouldn't have been around to grab Monster Hunter and the entire history of video games. Very different right now. The fact that they stuck with that platform longer than it seemed to make sense actually did help them in that case.
According to Massive Score, there isn't some sort of magical voodoo that let people get Yakuza 6 for free. The demo was the full game. They just accidentally shipped the entire game as a demo.
Sega! Poor Sega. Every time they do something awesome, something like this happens.
The new Overwatch hero's name is pronounced closer to Brigitte, apparently.
Okay.
Thanks. I'd have to watch the video to know.
Sounds like a Dragon Ball character.
That was from Spiderface. That's a good name. I like that. Yeah. Spasmgasm also writes. Okay. He left the audience.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. These names are fantastic.
It's like you never see that on C-SPAN. And Spasmgasm writes it.
Okay, you know what? Never mind. I'm terrified of what's happening now.
When briefly discussing Dishonored, Gary described the franchise as steampunk. While that's not a bad descriptor, whale punk is the term adopted by fans due to the prevalence of whale oil and bones.
Whale
punk. You
learn
something new every day, don't you?
Yeah, I didn't know that.
This guy writes, I just want Jared to say my name.
All right.
See,
what's the name?
That's it right there. You have to, I'll leave it to you to figure out how to pass it.
All right, we're going to go up. Oh, yeah, I've gotten this one wrong before. I believe this is...
Is it Ignacio?
Yeah, I believe it's Ignacio Rojas.
Ignacio Rojas. That
but
sounds right.
The first time I said it, it was IGN Asiojas because
you just thought it was IGN.
Yeah. So, but I believe it's Ignacio Rojas. Yeah, got it. All right, excellent.
Valve apparently planned to add female characters to TF2 back in 2009. There doesn't seem to have been any characters added after launch. Yeah, they kind of... Well, why is that? I mean, there's been... TF2, they've kept it going.
Right.
They've added all kinds of game modes and new maps and... bots and all kinds of stuff. They never added to the roster, and they're right. There's no female character.
Well, again, Valve really a video game company at this point? I mean,
it's true. I mean, they're mostly a retailer, right?
Yeah.
They'll surprise us. Something's coming. I want to believe. Okay, again, we pronounced the Overwatch hero. It's Brigitte, and she is the daughter of Torbjorn.
It's not Bridget, it's Brigitte?
Brigitte. Brigitte.
Wow, I did that. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Well, that's what I get. Again, another Dragon Ball character. Yeah, just wow.
Claire Extended Cut is a pixel art 2.5D side scroller with horror elements and has a rating of 60 on Metacritic based on 2 reviews. Could be interesting. Gary mentioned a Chan and Chan. Now we're getting to the good stuff. This is the premium content. Gary, Capitalist Pig writes, Gary mentioned a Chan and Chan game on the TurboGrafx-16 PC Engine in Japan. It was called Kato Chan and Ken Chan. Mm-hmm. So kind of halfway there.
I believe they were actually a real life
and it was known
duo.
As JJ and Jeff in North America. Yeah, it was a real life Japanese comedy duo.
Yeah.
And they got their own video game.
Yep.
So kind of like if they made a game out of, I'm trying to think, what's like an American.
I don't know. How about Takeshi and that other guy that's in his group that everybody forgets the name of? Or maybe Arino from Game Center CX and the other guy that's in that group. I guess these are all, you know what, this is living in Japan stuff.
England has a very proud tradition of like famous comedy duos, like the two Ronnies and Morecambe and Wise and Cannon and Ball and Little and Large. And that's a whole comedy format is like the two guys.
Japan, same way.
But America doesn't really have that,
I don't know,
does
Laurel,
it?
Laurel and Hardy, Abbott and Costello.
Laurel and Hardy and Abbott and Costello back in the day.
Yeah.
Not so much in the more modern era.
No, I guess Key and Peele?
Key and Peele would be one of the only recent examples, I think.
Yeah.
Let's see. Ni No Kuni, Ghibli, sadly, while the first game had Studio Ghibli's involvement, the upcoming Ni No Kuni 2 does not involve Ghibli in any official capacity. That said, both former Ghibli character designer Yoshiyuki Momose? This is not my strong suit. And longtime music composer Joe Hisaishi are still involved in the game just on their own contracts.
There we go.
All right, that's all for You're Wrong.
You know, I actually didn't realize that it didn't have any official involvement. That's interesting. I'm still interested, though. I want to play it. The first game is really good. Okay, so, folks, that's just about it. This afternoon, we're recording Gamescast. It'll be Greg, I, and Xavier Woods together. That's
exciting.
What are
you talking about?
Good question. I have no idea. Video games, I suppose. But beyond that, I don't really know yet. But that's getting recorded this afternoon. That'll be up for everybody on Monday, and patrons are going to be able to see that sooner. Also, each and every weekday, you can find us here at Kinda Funny Games Daily on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames or watch the show on YouTube afterward. If you want to support this here endeavor, the Kinda Funny Patreon is a good place to do that, and I hope that you will, because these men and women really do deserve your support and do some fantastic things here. They brought me into the fold, and I'm very much glad to be a part of it. So, Gary, any final words?
See you next Wednesday.
It was a pleasure, Gary. It's the first time we've done this. Thanks, y'all.